John Giles, of course, from the Jay Giles Band. Rest in peace, John. Passed away yesterday, 71 years. And Centrefold, a significant part of the 1980s. Even Ian Lennox might remember that. Do you, Ian, at all remember the Jay Giles Band and Centrefold?
I remember 1980s.
Oh, very good. Who are top of the table, Ben?
Brighton.
Brighton, top of the table,
yeah,
top of the league.
Brighton.
Why are Brighton top of the table, Ben?
Because we bet the Newcastle.
There you are, you see. Oh, it's Sheffield Wednesday. What did they do, Ben?
Beat Newcastle.
Amazing. Sorry, just keeping a happy spirit up here.
That wasn't even me, and that was Alex. It was,
I know it was.
Me.
He's going to pay for it, don't worry.
It's Monday, Thursday. I just wanted to sort of see where we're going. I mean, you're still 10 points clear, Ian. So
that's all that matters, really.
Well, yes, precisely. Whether you go up as champions or in... runners up place, you know, it's entirely up to yourself, really. At least it doesn't look as though Brighton are going to do what they did last season and choke.
I think they're too far ahead for that.
Oh, God, I hope so.
You played 41 games now, and you're, I guess, 12 points clear of the third team.
Yeah, I think
we've got a game in hand, so if they win that game in hand, which is by no means certain. You'll be 9 points clear with a better goal difference, which is basically 10 points. And you've got five games to go, so they've got to gain two points per match on you.
Yeah, so it's next one or two games, I think, if we win one of them. That's when we've got...
And you're winning. I mean, you seem to have a... I do admire Brighton because I like Chris Hughton a lot. He was up here, as you know. Mm. In fact, I think it's his first managerial post up here. Mm. And I think he's very, very unlucky.
He got your promotion and then they sacked him, effectively.
Yeah. There was a lot of, people who didn't know as much about football as he did got rid of them.
I won't talk about Middlesbrough because I've got a Fly Me to the Moon special that's coming up on Saturday, and I think the morning will be palpable. Unless, of course, they thrash Arsenal 6-0, in which case it could all be a whole new world, really. Mm. It's not going to happen. Right?
Well, Arsenal aren't exactly the most enthusiastic team at the moment, are they?
No.
I saw.
At least Borough are kind of showing solidarity with Sunderland by ensuring that two North East sides will actually... I'm sure Newcastle fans will find that gutting that Newcastle and the Sunderland and Middlesbrough might be relegated whilst Newcastle are promoted. I don't know how they're going to be able to cope.
Well, yes. I mean, most sensibly, would like to see three North East teams in the Premier League.
Yeah, that's not my experience of most Sunderland and Newcastle fans, it has to be said, but that's by the by. Maybe it's just a cultural thing. Here, Cody Johnson, tune as recommended by Camo from Nashville. This is American Camo from American Nashville yesterday. Ian?
Right.
Watching that eagle floating on the breeze, and as I listen to you dreaming by my side, I wish I could call you mine. Part that truly does love you. Cause you belong where your heart can be. Out in the open, wild and free, like a sweet summer rain passing through. Ain't never seen anything wild as you. You belong where the four winds blow. It's out where the untamed Mustang roam, like a sweet summer rain passing through. Never seen anything wild as you. You belong where the four winds blow. Out where the untamed Mustang roam, like a sweet summer rain passing through. Never seen anything wild as you.
Be written by Ian as an ode to Ollie and Ober, really, like a sweet summer rain passing through, never seen anything wild as you. What do the cats make of Wild as You and Cody Johnson, Ian Lennox?
Well, I am assuming they have exactly the same opinion as I have.
Of course.
Which is quite an ordinary song, really. It's quite nice. It jogged along, but in a week's time, I've forgotten all about it.
Straight up honest, Geordie opinion.
Exactly. We were just sort of commenting on some of the little headlines that have been featured, and Ben, obviously, in the light of Leicester City's European adventure and Craig Shakespeare's Boys, and obviously the fans who were getting into one or two little scrapes because the police were going there, and chanting that Gibraltar was actually ours, which was...
stating the obvious.
At this stage, exactly. And then followed through with a headline from one of the tabloid papers, which goes...
Up yours, signors.
Up yours, signors. Isn't that nice to see that, you know, this is post-Brexit era, that clearly the tabloid sub-editor is still at work, living and alive and well.
Is that the... All right, I want to guess which paper that would be. Yeah. It wouldn't be the Times, would it?
I thought it might be the Guardian, actually, but no. You know, I was wrong as well on both counts.
Tricked you both.
the Financial Times foreign editor strikes again.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Consistently. So how is the writing going? We haven't asked you for several weeks. And
I'm jogging along, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm about 35,000 words in now.
Wonderful. You are backing it up, aren't you, as you're going along? You are saving.
Oh, yes. I bought some software and it saves every 2 seconds.
Nice. Yeah.
But unfortunately, I'm so absolutely awful at using this sort of new stuff that I'm not sure how to use it, really. So I'm keeping it with the old, but I'm saving on to this other software.
Okay.
So I've got about 3 saves. I've got a memory stick. I've got two hard drives, different hard drives.
Is somebody coming into the door, or is that just the cats?
The cat trying to get out.
Oh, it was the cat trying to get out?
He had his breakfast, so he said, I've had enough of you lot talking on the phone to me.
Heard the music and done a runner.
Exactly.
there was a rude comment on Newcastle United that did it, I think.
Now, talking about the Newcastle scenario, I mean, let's give a huge praise to Mr. Knockhart, who has effectively been given the accolade from the Championship EFL. Player of the Year, he is. French winger.
Yes, I would agree with that.
I'd agree with that too.
I don't think Brian would be the same team without him. But he's, and also what I'm really impressed, I saw them playing about a week ago, is the team spirit, this fantastic team spirit they've got.
Yeah, I think the club's got sort of a community feel, I think, in particular.
But I think, Knockhart obviously loves it there.
Mm.
He seems to be very, very committed. I don't know what's going to happen in the close season.
I think he's devoted to staying, only because obviously the way, obviously his dad recently died too, which was a big impact, a big impact on his life, and I think that's what's allowed him to carry on.
I think he's part of a family out there. Yes, I never actually met the manager in person when he's up here, but I haven't heard a single person up here who said a bad word about him. And everyone says, what a smashing blow he is.
He wants to win the Championship Player of the Year award for his family following the death of his father.
Is this what Knockhart says? Yeah, right.
Okay. He's only 25. He's got a good couple of years left in him still. He's in his prime.
Yeah.
So whether he'll decide to leave for better opportunities, that remains to be seen. But I'd like for him to stay, or at least give a year in the Premiership.
Yeah. I think it sounds like he would do that, actually. I mean, Vardy did that, didn't he? Slightly different.
Well, unless, of course, the Cowley brothers put in a bid for him when they start off their league career for Lincoln City. You know,
when they might end up in a position at Arsenal at this rate.
Well, exactly.
Who knows?
Wonderful scenario. Ian, as ever, it's been a delight. But before we ask you those last 2 questions, are you a boomerang tourist?
No, I don't think so. I'm not too sure. I had a timeshare place. I used to go back every year.
Kate Humble will be talking about how recent surveys have suggested that actually we consistently as a country like to return to places that we visited on holiday, Paris being top of the list apparently.
Right, well, I think a lot of people do that, yes.
Been there once, and anyway, I didn't want to go again.
No,
didn't really enjoy it.
You didn't like Paris?
Well, there's just so many five things to really do, isn't there? And then once you've done those things, you kind of...
What are those five things to do in Paris?
Well, you've got Eiffel Tower, yeah. You've got the Louvre, yes. You've got the Arc de Triomphe.
Yes.
Champs-Élysées.
Yes.
And the cathedral. Notre Dame. That's it. That's all I can really think of.
And the whole Seine River. You've got the cafe on the left bank. You've got all sorts of things there.
Oh, I think it's not just going on tourist spots.
I mean, Newcastle, just five things to do in Newcastle, basically. One of these days, Ian, as we know, we're going to have you guide us around Newcastle, and you'll be the Ian Lennox audio postcard.
I should bring Arthur McKenzie with me.
Yes, exactly.
It was every street corner.
We shall be on that case, certainly.
He came to visit me, actually. A couple nights ago, after.
He's very good like that. He often sort of pays visits to the sick and the infirm. Sorry, can you do it?
We didn't mention Manchester City.
Yeah, I knew where we were going. It's just too much. It's been sensational as ever on this Maundy Thursday, in which I don't think Ian's been selected as yet to become a senior citizen to receive the Maundy pence from Her Majesty. But apparently it's £5.50 you get this year. So
right.
Really?
Yeah, that's the official sort of things that put to represent, obviously, and 91 people to represent the age of Her Majesty the Queen. We would have got Richard to talk about that, but we would have still been on the phone, really, so I thought we'd just ease fire on that basis. Last two questions for Ian, please.
Ian, have you enjoyed your telephonic interview this morning on the show?
I have indeed.
And will you be joining us again next week?
I do hope so, when we're both up in the Premier League.
Exactly. We'll crack open, well, I don't know about the champagne this time in the morning. We'll crack open some more orange juice.
Keep it clean.
Time now for Ben Lewis with the siren weather.
Highs of 11 degrees, lows of 7 degrees, a chilly dry start, and the cloud will be more extensive during the day.
Ben Lewis, probably the best reason to visit Brighton there's ever been.
Very good.
Did I beat Phil on that one, do you think? Or?
Yours was a lot more focused, but then Phil had added value. It's frequently said we'll always have Paris, particularly the episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, which refers to that. And it would seem that when it comes to repeat destinations, Paris is at the top of the list, followed by Amsterdam, Barcelona, New York and Rome. Now, to talk about this boomerang travel phenomenon, we're delighted to be able to welcome a genuine Renaissance woman, the person without which basically Spring Watch would not be spring. In fact, you know, spring would not have sprung with that. The legend that is Kate Humble. How are you, Kate?
I'm very well, Alex. Thank you for that tremendous introduction. I hope I can live up to it.
I'm sure you will. Now, this particular feature that was carried out by the American Express Companion Travel Guide, obviously focusing on Europe from that perspective, but it does seem as though actually you've liked a place once, you want to return, you want to find out more.
And it's fascinating, isn't it? Because you sort of imagine that when people are planning a holiday, they think, oh, you know, I'm going to go somewhere new. I want to go somewhere different. Maybe they've got a little bucket list of places that they want to go. But actually, when I read this research and I was sort of thinking about it, I thought, well, there are lots of places that I've gone back to. And the reason that I go back to them is that in a funny sort of way, it makes for a more relaxing holiday. Because, of course, when you go somewhere new, it's incredibly exciting. It is that kind of voyage of discovery, literally. But it does take you a bit of time to find your feet. And sometimes that literally as well. You know, you're standing in the lobby of the hotel or on the street with your map going, which way do I go? And there's that. There is a pressure, I think, of absolutely making the most of a new destination. You know, have I been to all the museums that the guide says I should? You know, have I done all the things that, you know, as a tourist, I'm kind of almost duty bound, I think you feel sometimes when you go to a new destination.
Of
and,
course.
You know, I know for myself, my husband will look at me and go, I'm exhausted, you know, because you're going, right, we've done that and we're supposed to eat this. And, you know, and I think the joy of going back to somewhere where you've been to before is that you feel like you feel a little bit more confident. First of all, you know, you've been there before. It's sort of it has that lovely comfort of familiarity. But also, I think you can kind of relax more. You're thinking, well, I've done those museums and actually I'd love to pop back to that museum because it's fantastic. So, you know, you might well want to go back. If you're in Paris, you might well want to go back to the Louvre. But instead of trying to do the whole museum, you might say, well, I just want to go and see, you know, one particular thing that I loved last time. But the other thing I think that happens when you return to a destination is you have the confidence to move away from the kind of classic tourist itinerary and start to think a bit more like a local and try, you know, be a little bit, in a funny sort of way, be a little bit more adventurous because you don't feel that pressure to go and do all the things that the guidebook tells you to do.
And of course, year in, year out, the cities themselves change. I mean, Lincoln this year is not the same as Lincoln last year. There are changes that are afoot as well.
Absolutely. And also time of year, you know, season that you go, you know, New York, which is one of the top repeat destinations, you know, is an extraordinarily different city at Christmas than it is in the summer, you know, or in the spring. So, you know, there's a lot to be said about thinking about the time of year that you go and what goes on during that time of year. So, yeah, there are endless reasons, actually, to go back to a place. And it seems that we Brits have absolutely identified that.
And Kate, you mentioned travelling with your husband from that perspective. Clearly, travelling with a companion can also be a benefit to actually opening up new horizons as well in these areas.
Well, completely, because, you know, everybody, you know, if you're travelling with a partner or with your kids, you know, everyone's going to have their own agenda. And one of the other things that is lovely about returning to a place is that you might have met somebody local or you feel a bit more confident when somebody says to you, oh, have you tried this? Have you tried that? And one thing that the BAMX card has done, which it was really clever, is that they have put together a companion guide. And it is literally like a sort of an online local ready to show you round some of these most popular cities. And it's completely free. You can download it on amex.co.uk/companion. And they've talked to, you know, people at somebody in Amsterdam, for example, who's worked there, who lives there, who knows it absolutely like the back of his hand. And I was reading it this morning. He's got some lovely tips. It actually made me want to just say, right, I'm going to, you know, hop on a plane and get to Amsterdam. Really lovely ideas about things to do. And I think, as you say, you know, it's lovely traveling with somebody. And it's also lovely feeling like you've got a little kind of, you've almost got a backstage pass to the sort of more local life. It's like the locals giving up their secrets. And that's what this online companion does very well, I think.
Genuinely fantastic. I'd also say that if you are traveling wherever you fancy actually doing some reading, then select A Friend for Life by Kate Humbert.
Oh,
it's an absolutely ace text to work
heart.
Through. Have you had a recently interesting telephonic link with us today, Kate?
Always.
And I take it then we can hopefully, like a boomerang, look forward to connecting with you in the not too distant future.
That would be gorgeous. It's always a pleasure, Alex. Thank you.
There you go. Kate Humble doing magical stuff there in her own fantastic way. Coming up very shortly, we'll be speaking to Louis Savvy about Sci-Fi London. Yes, last week he wasn't with us because he had a bit of a crisis on the publishing front. Well, it can happen to the best of us. Who knows whether William Sitt will be with us, but Nick Smith certainly will. That's from the Harrogate Spring Flower Show.
Treasure every minute, every thought of the image. I'm Louis Savvy, director of Sci-Fi London Film Festival. You're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren FM.
If we time machined back to 2013, Ben, you'll see there an image of Ilana Rain, who sadly couldn't reach us last night from New York. Well, we couldn't reach her. She was having issues with her mobile phone. She'll be with us next Wednesday, though. Oh. Director of We Are All Cylons, Eclipse and Ellipse and all manner of wonderful things. And you can see that Ilana effectively clutching on to Louis Savvy, clutching on to him like a meerkat.
The classic director-producer
the
connection.
The classic director-producer connection with Louis Savvy. And that is really, that's why Uncle Louis, that's why Phil Leonis was so at pains when he launched the show this morning from midnight in Los Angeles.
It's like a baby gorilla grabbing onto the back of an actual gorilla.
It is. It's like, that is the kind of image which, in so many ways, even though that was, what, 4 English years ago, it's still there, Louis. You know, that's the message. You know, it's sort of the directors, they clutch onto you like some sort of dear life, and they say, please, 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 screen my film.
Yeah.
And make sure the sound's okay. But anyway, there you go.
Exactly.
How?
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, indeed. How was the printing experience, Louis? Because last week, of course, printing challenges struck. Printing crisis. Has it been sorted?
It arrives this morning. So I'm not going to anticipate anything. I'll see it when it gets. I guess I should be very pragmatic about it. It is what it is. It will arrive and it'll be lovely.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, there we are.
This is the brochure for Sci-Fi London, presumably.
This is our programme, yeah.
Yep. And everything which is actually there, and ideally you get one which is looking through my little bag of gifts.
He's rummaging. He's rummaging. If you didn't know.
Around.
Radio rummaging, eh?
That is an example of the quality that last year's brochure. That's the sort of standard that Sci-Fi London needs. So I'm sure it will, because at the end of the day, you don't want to have an unhappy Louis. That's the bottom line. Printers are well aware of
that. That's true.
Clearly.
So,
yes, I know.
48-hour this weekend, and I saw an entry arrive from the Midweek Drive Edge.
Whoa! Now, I was going to avoid that because I felt we can't possibly, because, you know, clear. But
I can tell you that this is just confirmation that we've received
yes.
it.
No, that's,
so there we are.
That's fine.
We're still in the process of. In fact, we're still going through them. There's over 150 films. Yeah. So,
oh, blimey!
That and 500 stories as well in the short story competition.
It's the taking part that counts. That's the important thing. Although I'm sure a special commendation for the Midweek Drivettes, who put it together from Scotland, from England, from all sorts of things simultaneously over the weekend. Quite frankly, I think they managed to pull those together, and it's only taken several years to get an entry for the Midweek Drive.
Yeah, that's all right. Have you seen it yet? Have you seen it?
No. Neither have I.
Yeah, I've got complete faith in Hannah and Holly. Tessa's seen it, so I think that's clear from that point of view, and obviously Eva McDonald and the rest of
them. Do let them know that they're quite able to put it up online and start telling people that this is their film now. If you want to start, let people see it. Yeah, we don't mind that. So we don't block anyone from putting their stuff up online. Okay. So we just will do our process in the background, and then we'll pick a shortlist from the films that have come in. But, you know, as I said to them, the worst thing that can happen is by Monday morning you'll have made a film, so
exactly.
You should get it out there and let people see it.
Exactly. This has been well done. And the reason we haven't got any of the Midweek Drivettes with us is they're still actually in therapy.
They're all knackered.
So, exactly.
Except me.
but you didn't take part of the movie, Ben. See,
I didn't.
Exactly. I was going to say, That's the producer's problem, you know.
It works. Your name was also being mentioned by my good self, it has to be said, several times on Monday, Ben, when I was speaking to Professor Karenza Lewis, because of a little event that she coordinates called Lincolnshire Lights, which is public appreciation of science, mm-hmm. external stuff. And I said, we should speak with Louis Savvy because he's very very keen to always get science, real science, into the science fiction elements.
Yep,
so
absolutely.
We will hopefully be exchanging email contacts and details for this October event, which is growing. And obviously, Karenza Lewis, she knows her stuff from Time Team onwards. You know,
we're not related in any way, by the way. although I'd love to be related to a celebrity, I don't
But if you work on Credulous, you'd have to work with Tony from Time Team and all the rest of it, Baldrick and
so on. Baldrick.
Yeah,
Baldrick. Get Mr. Bean involved as well.
It's a thought.
It's getting a bit weird again now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sometimes you feel that you can just sort of ease away from that weirdness. We pass our best wishes from Phil Lynas, who, as I say, launched the programme this morning. Truth is out there. Ancient Mysteries 2 actually starts filming this year. I think he's already started getting some footage in. So I think looking ahead, obviously, 2018, we should be looking for the return of the Lynas, shouldn't we, Louis?
Well, I hope so. Yes. Let's hope he makes a good film.
No
favouritism here.
No, I know. I tried, Ben, to sort of just nudge him in from that side of my view, but, you know, whatever. Continuing ever onwards, what is the schedule looking like in terms of the whole sort of event itself? Because last night, Fiona Moore, of course, one of our regular reporters, together with Alan Stevens, sort of down to do a whole range of things. So they already mm-hmm. haven't sent in the sort of list of
they've sent me their big list. They've sent me their big list of stuff they want to come and see, which is great.
Fantastic.
And we're looking forward to it. We've one of the films which we had in as the international premiere is now, I found out now, the world premiere of a movie called Blue World Order, which has got Billy Zane in it. Yeah. I'm dreadful with surnames sometimes. Stephen Walker, I think his name is. He was Bombor in The Hobbit. And they're the two. It's a fabulous film. I do have to tell you, if you like car chases in Mad Max kind of scenarios, this is one with seven DeLoreans chasing across the desert. It's quite incredible to see, and then all their wings open as they're chasing this car in this sort of Mad Max tundra, and we've got them all coming, it looks like, to the festival, so we're really excited about that. And just mm-hmm. planning is all done now. It's now making sure we get all the films.
Yeah, it's going to be sensational. Now, remind us, how can people actually access details about Sci-Fi London on the web?
SciFiLondon.com. That's all they need to type in, SciFiLondon.com. They find that in, or just type Sci-Fi London in Google and you'll find us. We're on all the normal channels, you know, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all that sort of stuff. Tickets are on sale now. There's a lot of free events as well. Hackstock, our two-day sort of immersive arts and technology weekend, where we've got, again, scientists and artists and, you know, disruptive people coming along and all talking about technology and the future, and whether you can replace psychedelic drugs with technology, and so on.
Just the oxygen of life, really.
Well, Timothy Leary was really getting into that before. You know, his famous, you know,
tune in, turn on, drop out,
and drop out. He changed it before he died, or updated it, and did a tune in, jack up, or jack in. Tune in and drop out. So, exactly. Because he just saw that computers were going to be or certainly screens and the internet and being able to use cyberspace would be a new opiate. And I don't think he's far off the mark.
It's like Ghost in the Shell, isn't it? Really, you know.
It is.
Suddenly, we all become Scarlett Johansson. You know, and that's
exactly.
We just manifest ourselves in that way. It's just quite amazing. Sci-Fido, is that still going ahead?
Sci-Fido certainly is going ahead. Yeah, absolutely. You'd be barking mad to miss it.
I was going
to
say, it did catch my eye, and that's what I was going to mention. Alex gave me a copy of a previous year's brochure here, and it caught my eye halfway through. There's a green chihuahua with a little cloak around it, meant to be Yoda, I presume.
Exactly.
And he came along with another chihuahua who had a Darth Vader mask on.
And I don't know what to think, to be
owner,
honest.
And the owner came dressed as Leia.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
You get all sorts there.
It just actually adds to the quality of the whole experience. That's the important thing. And as we suggested with Frodo, our faithful friend Frodo, a pug in Gibraltar, that we're actually looking to get him dressed as an Easter bunny. He could be Pug's bunny. Yeah, exactly.
Very good. Very good.
We've been working on these things for years, Louis, and gradually we release them stage by stage and step by step.
We drag it out.
Into a whole new world. The material is there,
that
and we can stretch it.
Collection of puns is...
Exactly.
It's still big, but it's
So, yeah.
It's going down slowly.
Precisely. Yeah. Precisely. That's our route forward. I'm genuinely hopeful that we'll be able to get a little midweek drive trek again to catch up with Sci-Fi London when it's there. Just for, I think it's probably due to the late Easter that suddenly we turn around and we think, good heavens, are we that so halfway through the whole thing? It's very strange.
Yeah.
Because, of course, we've still got to personally deliver your calendar, Louis. I'm well aware of that.
Indeed. So indeed.
At least you get half
before
a
year. The year ends would be good.
It's a time traveling thing, clearly. You know, that's
exactly.
The bottom line. You know, we could access this and take it before the year ends, quite rightly so. So have you got the last two questions, please? Oh, I've just managed to locate the Sci-Fido pieces that we actually did back in 2015, I think, when we were last sort of covering that. Yes, Sci-Fido. What's not to love about the fabulous sort of connection between the Chihuahua and North Vader there. I mean,
it's stunning. Absolutely stunning.
That was in Brixton, of course.
I want to know how they dyed the dog green. Oh, I really want to know how they did that.
Hair chalk, Ben.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Perfectly
and if you,
safe.
In fact, it's a big tip for anyone who feels like they want to go and do some graffiti as well. Go and get some coloured hairspray. Because you can graffiti walls to your heart's content, and then it'll just wash off when it rains. See? Yeah.
And that, you see, once again, Louis has just taken that baton and lifted the thing just a couple of stages further forward. It's nip and tuck.
Helpful advice to anyone that's to vandalise.
Between Phil Leonis's new career as a weather girl and Louis Sevy's input in terms of general sort of way, I mean, I feel as though we've just launched
we've covered
a whole
all bases.
Movie. Exactly. Monday, Thursday will never be looked at again the same.
Exactly. After today. Indeed.
Last two questions for Louis, please. Ben.
Have you enjoyed your tenant on Memphis today on the show?
A little weird at the start, but sorted itself out.
When's it ever normal? And will you be joining us again soon?
Hopefully next week.
Yay!
Yeah.
Listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
Yes, after you've done the director of Sci-Fi London, clearly it's time to move effortlessly across the airwaves to William Sitwell. Good morning, William. How are you on this Maunday Thursday?
Very well, thank you. Sun's out. I'm still alive.
And that's all we can wish for in many ways. Except, obviously, it gets even better on every day of the week. I'm not sure whether you would ever sort of follow Sci-Fi London as a piece, but it is the festival which some of our Midweek Drivettes took part in the 48-hour film challenge recently, and it's the 17th Sci-Fi London Film Festival, with of course added Sci-Fido. Yes, a cosplay competition for canines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a real science fiction fan, to be honest.
Yeah, that's
And I don't even watch Star Wars.
Oh, well, there we are, you see. So it would be... In this particular case, you've got to keep the dimensions separate. Otherwise,
definitely,
across the streams, you don't know what could happen there. Easter, obviously, approaches. Anything in your mindset for making Northampton feel even more Eastery than normal?
Well, I think that people should actually take a step back and then take a step forward. And then do a bit of baking and make some hot cross bun donuts. And if you want to know how, get in touch with a man called Justin Galatley, who runs Bread Ahead, an amazing baking school in London. He was on my radio show this week. And we tasted his cinnamon-infused creamy donuts with little icing crosses on the top of them. And they were pretty damn naughty. And I think, actually... I mean, obviously, we need to remember that actually Easter is the most important event in the Christian calendar.
Mm-hmm.
And why not do a bit of baking while you ponder on resurrection and your own calamitous life?
Profound thinking as ever. You know, that's the sort of thinking that really our current politicians could actually do with a healthy dose of. Not just a pinch, a healthy dose of. You know, a couple of teaspoonfuls, tablespoonfuls, I would say, of the system.
Yeah, and then a little bit of slow roast lamb while you're at it.
Mm-hmm.
Slow roast lamb is a great idea. If you get the latest copy of Waitrose Food, we've got a recipe by Market Pierre White.
Yeah.
And the great thing is you don't have to worry if you're slow roasting a leg or a shoulder about whether or not it's going to be perfectly pink, because going to be in the oven for about 4 hours, and the flesh of the meat can just be pulled off the bone with a fork, so you can go down to the pub, you can lose yourself a bit, you don't have to worry about being a bit late for lunch. So go and procure yourself a little bit of lamb and shove it in the oven, shut the door and pray.
You see, that's it, slam in the lamb and then actually think about a different kind of lamb.
Is there anything else you'd... William, good morning. Is there any other kind of things you'd suggest having with this roast dinner for the Easter Sunday?
Well, I always think another good thing, Dauphine Noir's potatoes is always really good, because, again, you can make them in advance and just heat them up. And all you have to do is slice your potatoes quite thinly, and then in another bowl you can mix in a little bit of cream, a little bit of nutmeg, some gratings, shavings of Parmesan, maybe a splash of milk, some salt and pepper. And then you layer it up in the pan, and add a little bit more pecorino or whatever cheese you have. Again, that can sit slowly. And then also, you know, you can take it out and you can warm it up again. And then a crunchy salad. I think that's always easy, because you can do that last minute with a little French dressing. Then crack open a nice bit of white burgundy or nice cheap chili and pinot noir.
It's
yummy.
Just, yeah, exactly.
It sounds good.
Perfect.
It sounds very nice.
I hadn't realised it was 5 English years ago that William started doing these links with us. It's a celebration. prompted into the notion by, yes, the anniversary on that social networking site, which deals with the face, is a history of food in 100 recipes, according to the Times, by William Sitwell. This is a triumph. Any one of the essays will deepen your relationship with a particular food.
Oh, well, that's nice. Remember.
Exactly. It's very important. And talking about great scenarios, we were very close to actually having a slight confusion with respect to Ritesh Batra. Ritesh Batra, the director of The Sense of an Ending, recently featuring, of course, Jim Broadbent. And for some reason, Ben thought, Ritesh worked on MasterChef. So we thought we'd challenge that, actually. I don't think he ever has, because I think the Ritesh Batra MasterChef was quite simply the experience of a short film called MasterChef. Unless, of course, William, you're going to say, yes, Ritesh Batra, he's a regular director on MasterChef. It's a completely different scenario. It's not a short film from 2014 at all.
Yes, no, you've lost me. Never heard of the guy.
That's all.
I was filming it,
there we go.
filming it yesterday, and I didn't see a man with such a name.
Yeah, that's okay. We're fine. We're clear. We've clarified that, and we've made things sure, because it could have been very embarrassing if we didn't do an interview with Ritesh, and we said, how's William Sitwell? And he claims never to have known you.
Yeah, exactly. This happened.
Life continues. Okay, William, it's been sensational as ever. Where exactly are we reaching you today?
I'm on... where am I? I'm Russell Square in London. Mm-hmm. I'm on my way to Euston.
Excellent.
Station. Riding a bicycle?
Always.
I'm actually pushing it, because as your phone call came in, I thought I would be sensible and get off my bike and push it.
That's what we like to hear. Exactly. Safety advice given on the radio show in the morning.
Exactly. Stay safe, stay alive. That's the strap line from that sort of point of view. So I take it, William, you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today.
I have. Can I make a request, please?
Of course.
Okay, I want you to play the moment I stop talking and our interview stops, Virtual Insanity by Jamiroquai, please.
Is there any particular reason for that? I mean, are you a hat
person? It's a song written by my friend Toby Grafty Smith. And if you listen carefully, you can hear right at the beginning his wonderful keyboard and his melody. And he died yesterday.
Yeah, no, indeed, absolutely.
So if you can play Virtual Insanity, then we can all go crazy in his memory. And everyone can listen to his dexterous hands on the keyboard. It's a beautiful piece of music. He wasn't from Detroit. He was a white boy from Northamptonshire. And he's one of the three C's, but he's now parted. So I'd love it if you could play that track and we can remember him.
We'll speak next week, William.
Just can't see that half of us immersed in sin is out.
an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, to go back to a pre-decimalised day. But to address this with respect to HPV and human papillomavirus, we're delighted to be able to welcome two fine folk to the studio today. First of all, TV presenter extraordinaire, the fantastic Jeff Brazier. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well indeed. And Dr. Christian Jessen, ace media medic and, again, general all-round wonderful soul. How are you, Christian?
With an introduction like that, we are putty in your hands.
Oh, Christian, if we can come to you first, because HPV, I mean, clearly it's one of those three-letter acronyms which folk may not be aware of, and yet actually, in terms of its perniciousness throughout the Western world, etc., it's something which perhaps we should be more aware of.
Yeah, you're spot on. It's something I think that is a bit of a mystery to a lot of people. If I say the word wart to you, everyone will have heard of them. It's a virus which can cause warts in some people. It can do absolutely nothing in some people. It can be much more serious and lead to sort of changes to cells which can unfortunately cause cancer in some people. So actually it is a serious virus, and I do wish people knew a little bit more about it.
Absolutely. And Jeff, obviously you have personal experience, tragically, of losing your partner to this, Jade Goody, of course, the fine soul, looking down, I'm sure, from heaven now, sort of saying, yeah, go, Jeff, go. But in terms of the whole sort of sequence there, this is one of the reasons you got involved with this campaign, presumably.
Absolutely. Well, I have two boys that are very much in the age group for which where Boots are going to be vaccinating or offering that vaccination to two boys. So it's something that was very interested at. Obviously, you know, protection and prevention are very much a parent's job. And, you know, it's not just about protecting them from the dangers and the perils of social media and crossing the road and your standard jobs, really, but also, you know, can I prevent them from getting a form of cancer that was obviously similar to their mum's in that it was caused by HPV potentially, and something that could lead to other, you know, cancers like anal cancer and penile cancer and potentially some throat cancers as well. So that's absolutely something that I'd like to spare them from, as any parent would.
Jeffrey, again, sort of just following on from that sort of perspective, you know, clearly there's a balance here between, you know, ensuring that you approach these difficult sort of decisions, etc. It's often a case of sometimes when you're dealing with your children's health, you need to effectively be fairly explicit and say, look, this needs to be done and sorted, because I'm sure there'll be questions asked for most young boys about, you know, obviously where things are going, and you need to sort of obviously use an educational aspect as well.
What I was very grateful for is this gave me a really good opportunity to speak to my 13-year-old in particular about where he's at from a sort of female perspective. And we had an interesting conversation yesterday about whether he would like the vaccination, whether he would, you know, see the benefits as worth going through the very short-term pain of having a needle in his arm. And you can imagine that as a 13-year-old, his response was not necessarily the most mature to begin with. But once he obviously made the link to his mum, he started to see the benefits, and he actually agreed to do it. But yeah, it was an interesting conversation. It was good. I said, Bobby, obviously this needs to be done before you're sexually active, and you know, and he got very embarrassed, and all right, Dad, you know, but still, it's really good and really important that parents have a clear line of communication with their children on that subject.
At least you didn't say, Jeff, you'll actually, if you didn't get the vaccine, you'll engage in dad dancing with him. So, you know, just a step away from that. Let's move back to Christian, because the reason that it's so important that you actually have these vaccinations done early, and we're looking at the 12 to 14-year age range primarily, it's not to actually encourage sexual activity, but it's basically to ensure that systems are in place to act as preventatives, really.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, we want to make you immune to something before you are exposed to it. You know, that's basic common sense. Actually, we know that this vaccine can pretty much be given at any age. Different places have different guidelines as to what ages they'll give it. But, you know, it'll still offer a degree of protection. So there's never a question of it being too late. But I think, you know, that's one of the great myths, that if you sort of start to talk to your children about this sort of thing, or even give them this vaccine, it will encourage them to start having sex. In fact, you know, you look at the research, we know that the complete opposite is true. The informed child, you know, like Jeff's boy, who's been talked to, you know, very openly about his dad about these sort of things, is now a much less vulnerable child. He's an educated child, and he can make informed decisions. And that usually means actually they delay the age which they first start to dabble in this sort of thing, not actually start doing it because dad's talked to them about it.
Sure. Now, the other thing, Christian, is clearly we live in an era where everybody's looking at the bottom line, the pounds, shillings and pence and so on. And this is one of the ways in which actually Boots have taken the lead in this particular aspect. And indeed, they're not putting stress on the NHS for this side of things, because you can obviously sort of purchase the thing via Boots and their particular campaign.
You can. Unfortunately, this isn't available to boys yet on the NHS. Quite why is a mystery, and I'm quite happy to say that. A lot of us who work in sexual health have wondered why we're not vaccinating boys too, across the board. It doesn't really make a lot of sense to only vaccinate 50% of the population. So I think it's very important that parents have choice, and clearly now they do. They have the option to get their boys vaccinated on time, even though that isn't yet available on the NHS.
In terms of cost, we're looking at two vaccinations for people aged between 12 and 14-year-olds. And then, of course, the three vaccinations if you're over 15 years of age. It's pretty much £150 per vaccination, I would have thought, basically.
Yeah, it is. It's been about £300 and £450 for the course of two or three. And that's not cheap. We must acknowledge that. It's not a cheap vaccine. But it's an investment, I think, in your child's, future health. And, there's the old cliche that money can't buy health. Well, actually, I think it can, and it's just a question of prioritising investing. And if you think this is important, and I have to say, as a sexual health specialist, I think this is important, and I think it's worthwhile spending the money on it.
Jeff, where can people go to find out further information? I mean, clearly, this is, you're all over the wonderful mass media forms for this, but there are still folk who still think, where can we find out more information about HPV vaccinations for boys?
Well, I can absolutely go to the Boots website. And again, I think any reason to speak to your children about their sexual health, albeit seemingly a long way off, is always a good thing. So yeah, go to the Boots website.
So much better than the Birds and the Bees, which is a long time ago from a different era in many ways, but great comedy gold for certainly YouTube situation comedies. Jeff and Christian, it's been fantastic just sharing some thoughts with yourself today. Very important concept that you've actually raised with us, and I'm sure if we've just actually helped one person actually think about the vaccination, it's been a success from that point of view. Many thanks, gentlemen. Hopefully we'll speak again very soon.
Thank you. Bye.
I wanna take you somewhere, so you know I care, but it's so cold and I don't know where. I brought you daffodils on a pretty string, but they won't flower like they did last spring. And I wanna kiss you, make you feel alright, I'm just so tired to share my nights. I wanna cry and I wanna love, but all my tears have been used up on another love, all my tears have been used up on another love, all my tears have been used up on another love, all my tears have been used up.
Oh,
Clearly, we have a situation where the tales of family sibling rivalry has echoed right the way from the dawn of time, arguably right the way from Cain and Abel onwards, really. And recent research, actually partly with the Disney Corporation as well, has suggested that sibling psychology and success stories are certainly connected. Whether you happen to be a chief executive officer, whether you happen to be an astronaut, a rock star, a reality TV star, it can all start in the family. Our firstborn children apparently having a bigger chance of becoming the next astronaut, Kim Peek, or indeed Kim Kardashian, whereas second-born children tend to be more authors such as Lewis Carroll and others. Now, to address this whole element and, of course, to coincide with National Siblings Day, we're delighted to be able to welcome a Renaissance woman, psychologist extraordinaire, generally all-round wonderful soul. It's Emma Kenny. Emma, how
what
are you?
What a lovely introduction. Thank you.
Now, Emma, clearly from your own perspective, looking at this particular research, it's obviously tying in with the wonderful movie Frozen.
Yes.
I'll try and avoid saying Let It Go or Breaking Into Song.
I know,
it's
a brilliant film, though.
Exactly. But as with all these kind of things, there's kind of evidence in facts that, yes, sometimes the second ball, I mean, we hear it even in terms of the royalty. It's an heir and a spare. You know, the firstborn seems to obviously be projected ahead to success, perhaps.
I think absolutely the way that you're born into a family, whether you're first, second, third, fourth, and so on and so forth, does impact on the way that you develop your perceptions of who you are, what you want to be, and what your future is. So I think that if you're the firstborn, it does make sense that firstly, nothing has been done. Everything is new ground. You are a pioneer. Mm. So whatever you're doing will be recognised in that respect. And the attention that you tend to be given is quite, you know, it's quite unique because you're on your own. Of course, when you get onto the second child, everything's slightly different. So if, for example, you're like me and you're a middle child, you learn to fight for what you need, but you also learn to be quite diplomatic because you have to be. You have to learn to share, for example, and you have to be able to navigate the distance between, you know, you and your sibling in a way that means that you can still play together. And finally, when you're the youngest child, everything tends to be again directed on you attention wise because usually the babies of the family are lavished both by siblings and by parents. And so just by proxy of being in that environment, your personality will be affected. So you were just bringing in the characters, for example, of Elsa and then compared to Anna. So even though that's obviously a film and a cartoon film, the truth is that Elsa was actually quite a pioneer to some degree. So you can imagine a linear and logical path for somebody who's a leader, which is she's the first child, she led a country, but she could have equally been a scientist, an engineer, or somebody who goes into space, absolutely, as you noted. And Anna, we see in the younger child, and actually she is quite representative. You know, she's a daydreamer, she's quite spontaneous, and she undoubtedly sees exploring the world as really important. And because of that, she's more sensitive and idealistic, which is why you find people who are third children or fourth children who are at the end of their sibling group, they go into more creative and idealistic environments. So sensitive, for example.
With the average UK family being 2.44 children.
Who is that point for?
I've always been confused about that particular one, but never mind, the statistics carry onwards from that point of view. Is this something, I mean, what happens in the case of twins, for instance?
Oh, twins are really interesting because it's absolutely dependent on whether they are, you know, identical or non-identical. With identical twins, what you see is quite similar experiences. So when they've done lots of studies, and they've done lots of studies with twins, they tend to experience the world in a very, very similar fashion. However, if you're having, you know, non-identical, maybe a brother and sister, for example, just because of the gender, even though they're in the same environment experiencing the same parenting, very often they interpret the world in different ways in accordance to their gender, for example, or the way that dad plays with one and mum plays with the other more so. It depends on your unique experience in that respect. But one of the things that you see in twin situations is they're often incredibly good at sharing and they're incredibly good at supporting because to some degree they have that unique experience of sharing every single moment with another human being who reflects themselves in many ways, even if they're non-identical. So you do tend to get traits in twins where they are incredibly diplomatic, very able to share, but also at the same time quite steadfast in attitude, because of course when you already have another you in the room, so to speak, you need to forge your identity quite effectively. In non-identical twins, that's quite striking, whereas, like I said, in identical twins you get a lot more collaboration. And that's not meaning that they're stereotypical, it's just that they share the same DNA and they're being brought up in the same environment and they look the same and often are dressed the same. Those cues and variables definitely shape and affect behaviours.
It's interesting, so far as the more one looks into this, the more I feel that humans have more in common with meerkats and families from that point of view.
You're absolutely, yeah, very often. Very often, and primates. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
It's the same sort of routine.
But,
Also interesting in terms of the range of things, that it would seem that if you're looking to be composers, we see the line that younger children, Mozart's or Tchaikovsky's and so on.
Yeah,
so,
but and only children are hugely more likely to be artists, for example. And I think that one of the nice parts about this research was, because it's been focused on particularly Frozen, for example, and they're looking at kind of how your families are formed and forged and how siblings relate to one another. I think what's really nice is that in this particular film, it's all about the family discourse. It's about the emotional distress that has occurred at the very beginning of the film that kind of alienates the girls. And very often in life, that's what happens in sibling relationships. There can be quite difficult situations where, you know, you lose contact with your siblings due to family breakdowns and problems. But actually, what's lovely in this is that you realise in the end that siblings are actually, you know, absolutely important and imperative, you know, in a happy family life. So these girls come back together. You know, it's almost like their discourse in the end, they realise that they need to share the same space again. And that's what makes it such a great film. But actually in human lives, you know, if people are out there and they've lost contact with their siblings, today's a great day to just think about reaching out, because they are your blood and they are your situation and they can reflect your memories. And I think that sometimes we forget just how important our brothers and sisters are. And it's really healthy and helpful if you have got that emotional discourse to reach out to people, you know, who you are missing in your life.
Well, speaking as an only child, I'm not sure what the research will say about
it. Well, you fit it. You fit it to some degree, because when you think about artists, you know, we're talking about that, you know, a huge variety of artists, that kind of creative nature. Mm. So, you know, it's 181% exceeding the ratio. So you absolutely fit that. Oh,
there you go.
Yeah.
Academic and broadcaster.
There you go. It's an absolute healthy mix.
Well, most peculiar. And also looking at the exploration side of things,
yes,
that proportionally 12% more are likely to be younger children. People,
yes,
like Christopher Columbus, one of five.
Yeah.
Sir Francis Drake, one of 12.
Yeah.
Of course, families have reduced in size from that point of view, but it's interesting that those patterns do tend to exist.
Yeah, they do. And I think with youngest children particularly, if you think about it, the first child tends to be dominant to the degree that they've pioneered everything. The middle child tends to know how to fight for the attention in a way that means that they've kind of become more democratic and diplomatic, so to speak. And the youngest child almost is this place where different kind of thoughts and feelings can manifest, because they kind of can daydream more because they're younger and they're getting kind of spoiled a lot of the time with the attention from the parents and the siblings. They're excused sometimes behaviourally because they're the youngest child. And so it kind of allows them to be a little bit more creative with the way that they think. So exploration and breaking new ground in that way is something that kind of fits, it parallels that kind of personality trait. Obviously, when I'm talking about this, everybody's a unique individual, but you can definitely see that there are certain elements and traits within siblings that match, you know, from family to family. As long as you've got a good family and you're loved and cared for, then the chances are you will reflect some of these personality traits yourself.
Absolutely. And if we took a Buddhist line, we'd say we're all one in any case, but that's
we
a different
are
perspective, which we won't go on. But I did sort of emerge when I was thinking about the snowman in Frozen, because
yes,
he's definitely a sort of character of their own.
He's lovely. Well, the thing about him is he's very much an equaler, isn't he?
Mm.
He cares for everybody and he has a common goal, which is to kind of protect. I think we like characters like that.
Much like yourself, Emma, in many
ways.
Oh,
I would hope so.
Just a different line there.
Well, I was an awkward middle child, so there you go.
Where does one go to find out further information about the research?
Disney.com.
Disney.com.
Yeah,
best place to actually go. All sorts of marvelous things there. Emma, it's been a sensational delight, as
always
ever.
Always is. Take care, sweetheart.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
This weekend soon. Cheers, Dad.
Bye. The snow glows white on the mountain tonight. Not a footprint to be seen. A kingdom of isolation. And it looks like I'm the queen. The wind is howling like this swirling storm inside. Couldn't keep it in, heaven knows I tried. Don't let them in, don't let them see. Be the good girl you always have to be. Conceal, don't feel, don't let them know. Well, now they know. Let it go, let it go.
And sadly, we have to let the show go, even though we have said hi to Phil Leonis in Los Angeles, Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar, Richard Fitzwilliams in London, Ian Lennox in Tyneside, Louis Savvy also ready for Sci-Fi London Film Festival, Kate Humble, Emma Kenny, Jeff Brazier, and William Sitwell. It's been awesome, Ben, hasn't it?
It has. It has.
There we are. We wish you all a very happy Easter. We'll wish you that again when we're back next week. You're back on Wednesday and Thursday next week, all being well.
I will be. Yes,
excellent. The Midweek Drive continues. The news is coming up from the Sky News Centre in a few moments. We're off to sing with Idina Menzel now. Just let it go. Let it go. Sorry, I'm getting carried away now, obviously. It's just a frozen moment, and that isn't a weather forecast. Say bye-bye, Ben.
Bye-bye. To see what I can do to test